And we are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio, solid conservative and just plain right, covering down on some major ground across the northern half of the most beautiful state in the nation. This one right here, Alabama. Y'all, I'm talking about this show. We send our signal like way down south of Birmingham and up north of Huntsville and Tuscaloosa, back to Gadsden, parts of Georgia, Tennessee, and even Mississippi all thrown in just for good measure. Well, listen, I promised you, and he is definitely coming on. So on the phone right now with us, one of our Republican members of our delegation, Congressman Gary Palmer, who hails from the Birmingham area. And he's also, if you didn't already know, you hear about the Alabama Policy Institute quite a bit on this show. And Congressman Palmer is the founder of API. And he is with us right now on the line. Congressman Palmer, how are you, sir?
Good, Phil. How are you?
I'm good. I am good. Just wide open. And was intrigued by the information coming out of D.C. last night. I understand that Congressman Scalise was able to return from his treatments, and last night y'all had a vote on Mayorkas. You want to describe the details?
Well, not much. There's no change from what we tried to pass the previous week and then brought it back for reconsideration last night. That thing that that people need to understand, and I understand everybody is focused on his failure to enforce our laws to secure our border, but I think it's one of the things that should really be problematic is lying under oath to Congress.
Yeah.
You know, he comes in and willfully misleads Congress, and I don't care if it's Republican, Democrat, or anybody else. That's a problem, and it should they should be held accountable. Otherwise, we're no different than the district attorney in New York turning people loose when they commit a crime.
No, I absolutely agree. And I'll be honest with you, I applaud the effort last night. I think that needed to happen. I know timing-wise, it got a little scary because we were watching the results of the special election up in New York coming in with Santos's seat being vacant. And obviously we lost that seat, and I know that we needed to get this vote done before the very slim margin changed slightly.
Well, because they'll move to certify that election very quickly and try to get Swazi on the floor as soon as possible to keep us in that one vote, very narrow margin of a majority. We've got some special elections coming up to fill Bill Johnson's seat, to fill Kevin McCarthy's seat. Those are solid Republican districts. We should get those back. But it's going to be tough to navigate any legislation, really, for the next few weeks until those seats are filled again. And even then, it's going to be tough. I mean, when you we'll go from a one-vote majority to a three-vote majority.
Well, this last night vote with Mayorkas, the impeachment of a cabinet official has only happened once before in all of U.S. history that I understand. 1876, I believe, was the last time this has happened.
Yeah.
And so I don't know if our audience fully understands the gravity of what y'all were able to accomplish with this vote, because even having a large majority, it's still a solemn moment if you get down to it.
Yeah, it's forever going to be in part of his record that he was so poor performing his job and so disingenuous in reporting to Congress. A lot of people forget that Congress has an enormous oversight responsibility. We pass the laws, but we also have a responsibility to make sure that these laws are enforced. And one of the powers, which is, as you pointed out, it's been 148 years ago, is rarely, it's only been used one time to hold people accountable, is the impeachment power. We've filed articles of impeachment against other people in 2016, somewhere in that range, maybe 2015. John Koskinen was the IRS commissioner, and there are 17 members, 18 of us total. We filed articles of impeachment against Koskinen. Because he allowed evidence to be destroyed. I think the lady's name was Lois Lerner, and they had said that her emails had been shredded or in the hard drive, And then we discovered about 30,000 more in a warehouse, and we had at least one subpoena, maybe two, and an evidence preservation order, and had him sitting in a hearing right in front of me and asked, do you understand that we've subpoenaed these documents and we have an evidence preservation order on it? And he said, yes, sir. And then, I mean, it was less than 2 months later, they were destroyed.
Wow.
So we filed articles against him, but Paul Ryan at the time was Speaker, and he didn't want to bring it to the floor.
Well, and, you know, I'm glad that our current Speaker was willing to bring this to the floor. And I think though, you know, as much as I don't want this to become like the every week we got a new impeachment kind of trend, I mean, no one should want that. Like I said, it is a situation that does carry great, you know, gravity. But nonetheless, mm-hmm. I, despite my background in law and in somewhat in politics and all that, and having lived through the near impeachment of Governor Robert Bentley, I can just tell you that I'm also glad y'all did this. I think I speak for a lot of my listeners who are glad to see this kind of activity, because we feel like we're constantly getting just, you know, disabused of our rights as citizens. And the idea that y'all held someone accountable, I think, carries weight.
Well, it's even abuse of the constitutional separation of powers. And this is something that people need to understand about Biden and the Biden administration. This is one of the greatest assaults on representative government I've ever seen, because they're passing regulation after regulation and new rule after new rule and completely bypassing the legislative process. I think that this is something that we could eventually take to court, maybe all the way to the Supreme Court, to reassert separation of powers and reestablish the legislative authority of Congress and the oversight authority of Congress. Our founders created a government to avoid what could be viewed as almost a dictatorship when everything's coming out of the executive office and we're helpless to do anything about it. So, well, I take no joy whatsoever in having to do something like this, but we have to hold people accountable, Phil.
Yeah.
Or we're going to lose representative government.
Yeah, and I would say too, accountability for true egregious actions, because it's not a matter of disagreeing on policy and so we're going to impeach you. This was not a Nancy Pelosi impeachment where we're just going to bring it to the floor and see what happens. I mean, I really appreciate the fact that y'all were on a fact finding mission, that you felt like the line was drawn in the sand. And that it had to be done. Let me ask you this. I recognize that the articles are now going to be referred to the Senate. And the Senate, for those who are not listening or those who don't know that are listening, the Senate actually conducts a trial-like procedure. In essence, I would just kind of liken it to the House has been the grand jury that then refers things to the actual trial. But Schumer is in charge of that piece, and he has some options before him. What do you expect him to do? What do you expect it to go to next?
I think they'll dispense of it fairly quickly, and it's not going anywhere. You have to have 3/5 votes anyway, and so we understood we can count. We're pretty good at that. That they're not going to impeach him, they're not going to convict him, but. What we needed to do, and you made a really good point there that a lot gets lost on a lot of people, because for the last year or so, I've had one person after another, you know, when are you going to impeach Mayorkas and all of this? And my response has always been, you know, let the process work. I'm a big believer in having the trial before the execution. Let's gather the facts. Let's present the evidence. And he may not get convicted in the Senate, but he'll be convicted by the court of public opinion. I feel the same way about Joe Biden.
Yeah,
they may avoid prosecution in the way we understand it, but they are not going to avoid the indictment of the American public. And if we do our job right, we lay out the evidence, I think the American people are going to draw the right conclusion.
Well, I would agree with that. And listen, Congressman, we got about 2 to 3 minutes left here. This is a serious, and I'm changing gears on you slightly, by the way. This is a serious time that we're in. There are grave concerns about President Biden's mental acuity, and And I've spent a great deal of time the last few days, so I'm not going to try and, you know, relitigate a whole bunch of stuff on my show. But there is every reason to believe that we have a commander-in-chief who is not fully capable of handling the job. There's also a story out right now that you may or may not even be able to comment on at this point with a briefing that members of House leadership and the House Intel Committee apparently received this morning. House Intelligence Committee Chairman Mike Turner is reportedly asking the Biden administration to declassify the threat brief because he felt like it was absolutely imperative that the people know what is happening. And so I say all that to say we got a wild dynamic going on with a president who we don't feel like can do the job, and yet threat briefings that apparently are that serious.
Well, I've been briefed. I had the classified briefing earlier today, and I can't comment on any of it. And, you know, if the president decides to declassify it, we can have the conversation. But for now, I can't comment.
Well, and I understand that, but could you speak to the concerns about the president himself and the fact that he's still the commander-in-chief at a time when everybody believes that he's impaired?
Yeah, I'm very concerned about it, and I don't know if you saw it, but I may be the only member, maybe there's two of us, that sent out something immediately asking for access to the tapes, because I don't want the document, the transcript. And I was asked, would I accept it if it was redacted? And the answer is no. What we need are the tapes, because you learn, it's not just what they say, it's how they say it. It's the inflection in their voice.
Yeah.
It's how they stumble over answers and stuff that tells you that. But here's the thing. I did an interview this morning with a more left-leaning reporter, and she wanted to insist that it's his age, and it has nothing to do
nothing
with
to
his
do.
Age.
Yeah, nothing.
I mean, I know Clint Eastwood directed and starred in a movie at 90 years old. Harvey Mansfield is teaching at Harvard. He's 91.
Yeah.
Henry Kissinger's last book, he finished when he was 98 or 99. It's about mental acuity.
Yeah.
And there are people younger than Biden who struggle with this. So it's about his cognitive ability, not his age.
Well, you're absolutely right, and I've said that multiple times. I've got family members that are sharp as a tack and could tell you exactly what's going on in the world around them right now, and they are the same age as the president, and I do not trust that he does. And I'll tell you, too, back to that transcript issue you talked about. I, as an attorney myself practicing law, you can go to court with the written transcript, but it does not show you the long pauses. It doesn't show you facial expressions. You lose a whole lot of context. It doesn't show you when there was an outburst, because someone can raise their voice and get agitated, and when you read it, you don't get that context. So tone inflection means the world.
When this reporter brought up his age, I should have said, well, then you think Nancy Pelosi should resign.
Yeah.
She's 2 years older than Biden. Bernie Sanders is a year older.
Yeah.
For crying out loud. They want to create a narrative that is a false narrative that they can then somehow apply to President Trump. And I'm just not going to let them do that.
Well, Congressman, we are out of time, but I certainly appreciate you, and thank you all for it. Just convey, please, if you would, how much we appreciate the fact that last night's vote took place, and we'll keep tabs on things and talk to you again sometime soon.
Thanks for having me on, Phil.
All right. Thank you, Congressman Gary Palmer, representing Alabama ably and up for re-election right now, as a matter of fact. Also, one of the more conservative members of Congress and the founder of the Alabama Policy Institute 34 years ago, I believe. All right, brother, take us to a break. We'll take that right now. We'll come right back. And then top of the hour coming up in 3:30, we're going to have Senator Tuberville coming up. Wow, what a show. Y'all stay tuned. We'll be right back.